Welcome, everyone. I hope you can hear me well. I am Daniel Huygens. I am the cryptography team lead at Proton, and I will be talking about modernizing email encryption today, primarily about the new version of the OpenPGP standard, but also about the OpenPGP standard more generally, and the OpenPGP ecosystem more generally, and how it has evolved in recent times. And I will in fact start with the latter, because OpenPGP has a rather bad reputation, at least as far as it comes to the user experience. And you might remember having to generate a key manually using GnuPG in the command line. And that used to be basically the only way to use PGP. But it's no longer the case. So my employer would like to tell you that obviously Proton made everything better, and you know it's so much easier now. But it's not only Proton, also Thunderbird has OpenPGP support built in now. You still have to click a few buttons, but it's much easier than before. And also other applications like FlowCrypt make it much easier to use encrypted email. And for a technical audience like this one, you might think, well, it's not a big deal. I can use the command line, or I even prefer it. And that's perfectly reasonable and fine. But for a wider audience, this is really important. And also for us, it's important because you want to write encrypted emails not only to yourself, but also to your friends, right? So, you know, the more people that use encrypted email, the more reason there is, in fact, to use it. And so the user experience is also very important, and it has improved over the past decade or so. Then, regarding the libraries, there used to be basically only one open source OpenPGP implementation, which is GnuPG. And of course, GnuPG is still around, but there are many more implementations nowadays. So, for example, GoPenPGP and OpenPGP.js are two implementations that Proton maintains and uses. And then there's PGP Inless, which is specifically designed to be easy to use, and it's a Java implementation, a wrapper around Bouncy Castle. Then there's PGPy, a Python implementation, RMP, a C++ implementation that's used in Thunderbird, and there is Sequoia, which is a new implementation in Rust, which Neil presented on in the main track earlier today. If you happen to have come across that, it aims to provide a modern implementation of OpenPGP, also for the command line, basically providing a drop-in replacement for GnuPG. And then key distribution. You might remember that, you know, back in the day, you might have to export your key manually and then attach it to your emails or upload it to a key server manually. All of that is also not really necessary anymore today. So there is the HTTP key server protocol. Well, it has been around for a while, but it's more widely used now and can be used by applications to automatically upload keys and also automatically fetch public keys of your friends. If you want to send an encrypted email to someone, your email application can automatically fetch keys to do so. And a web key directory can do something similar, but instead of fetching from a key server, you can fetch the public key from the domain of the email address that you're sending to. So if your provider supports that, or if you're self-hosting your email, you can serve your public keys that way. And then finally, there's AutoCrypt, which is a way to send public keys in email headers, so that also, again, the user doesn't have to worry about it, and you know everything should work automatically, hence the name. Slightly diving into HP Key Server, I won't dive into it very much because the presentation is not primarily about that. But so as you can see, you can simply make an HTTP request to fetch a public key for a given email address, and you get an OpenPHP key back if there is one, and then you can use that. And WKD is very similar, except instead of making a request to a key server, you make a request to the domain of the email address, as I said before. All right, then talking a bit about key verification. You might remember that FOSDEM used to host a very cool key signing parties. And, you know, as you can see, these people are having a lot of fun, and although the party hats have been photoshopped on, but nevertheless, you know, it can be fun, but admittedly, most people don't want to spend their time doing this in 2024. At least the average user probably doesn't. So there is an alternative to that as well, which is called key transparency. And I've presented about it at a previous FOSDEM, but just summarizing briefly, the idea behind key transparency is that we publish all the public keys of our users, or of the provider's users, or the key server's public keys, or whatsoever, to a append-only transparency log. Somewhat similar to certificate transparency, for example, if you heard of it, it's a concept where TLS certificates are published to a central transparency log. That's an append-only log, and everyone can verify that the TLS certificates that you are getting are in that log, and therefore are probably not malicious. And the basic idea here is the same. We publish the OpenPHP certificates to a transparency log, and then in this case, all the owners of the public keys need to check their own keys because they're the ones that then generated them and know whether it's the correct public key or not. So they go and check in the key transparency log whether the public key for their email address is correct. And then everybody else who fetches the public key can be certain that it's the correct public key, given that everyone sees the same keys. So it's roughly similar to a blockchain in a way. I know it's a dirty word, but the concept is vaguely similar. Everyone has the same view over the data. And if everyone checks the keys, everyone can be sure that all the keys are correct. And we have shipped this at Proton. There is also a working group at the ITF to standardize key transparency, not specifically for OpenPHP, but the general concept. And we would also like to standardize the use of key transparency for OpenPHP. So that not only Proton users can benefit from this, but all OpenPHP email can be protected in this way. Because the advantage of this, again, is that all of that is fully automatic. So the OpenPHP implementation, or the email client, let's say, can verify the keys without the user having to do anything. So it makes the use of end-to-end encrypted email much simpler. All right, so then getting to the actual OpenPHP standard. First, a short history. The current OpenPHP standard stems from 2007, believe it or not, so we're due for an update. Although it's not the case that nothing has happened since then, so there was an RFC for adding the Camellia cipher, and also for adding elliptic curve cryptography using the NIST curves in 2009 and 2012, respectively. But that's the last RFC related to OpenPHP that was published. After that, there have been a number of drafts, one for adding EDDSA. That has been widely implemented, and also adding curve to 5519 has been fairly widely implemented, but nevertheless has never been standardized. And there are a number of other things that were kind of overdue. The RFC 480 bis draft was in fact intended to be become an RFC as well, but that never happened. And then the crypto refresh is the most recent draft, and that will become an RFC very soon. It's currently in the editor's queue, so it should become an RFC in the coming weeks, hopefully. So what is actually in the crypto refresh? Well, a lot of things. Since it's been so long since we had an update, there were a lot of things that needed to be updated or that we wanted to update. So first of all, it merges the previous RFCs for Camellia and ECC. Then it standardizes, finally, curve 2519, as well as curve 448 and the brainpool curves, which are commonly used by the German government, and they like them. But they are not mandatory to implement. Curve 2519 is mandatory to implement. Curve 448 is recommended to be implemented. Brainpool is fully optional. So they can use it. Everybody else doesn't have to. Then it also adds modern AAD encryption, authenticated encryption, which was also fairly overdue. So it adds the use of OCB, EAX, and GCM. GCM was slightly controversial, so I'll dive slightly into that. So first, OCB is the mandatory to implement algorithm. EX and GCM are fully optional. The reason that they're there is because even though OCB in theory should be fastest, in practice, in our testing, particularly GCM is usually fastest because it often has assembly implementations, for example. So that's part of the reason why it's there. Another reason is because GCM is NIST, standardized by NIST, and so it's FIPS approved. So for the people that care about that, they can use that. But again, it's fully optional. So for those that want to use the theoretically fastest, or once it becomes actually fastest, everyone can use OCB. Then also a memory hard password hashing function was added, argon2. The previous password hashing function in OpenBGP was very weak, so this was also very very necessary. This means that if you, for example, encrypt your keys with a password, they're protected much more strongly. Of course, it's still important to choose a strong password, but it has become much more expensive to do brute force attack on that password. Then it deprecates a number of legacy algorithms, such as RSA with weak keys, DSA, Algamal, and so on. All of those things that we really shouldn't be using in 2024 have been deprecated. Then it prevents a number of key overriding attacks that we discovered in collaboration with ETH Zurich a few years ago that we worked around in our implementations, but the workaround was fairly expensive. So now they've been fixed in the spec, which is a much cheaper way to do it. So for the implementations that worked around those issues, this should provide essentially a free performance improvement. And by the way, the AAD algorithms also essentially improve the performance as well. So it's not just the main focus was about improving the security, but improving the performance is basically an added benefit. Then finally, it also protects against future vulnerabilities in hash algorithms by salting signatures, such that if, for example, SHA-2 ever becomes broken in the way that SHA-1 was, even though we don't expect that today, but it provides some protection against that. And then finally, it adds a padding packet, which means that if you want to hide the size of your files or the size of your message when you're sending an email or of your attachments, you can do that by adding a padding packet to hide the size of the unencrypted data. All right, then for what's next, or you might think, well, what about this? So the obvious one is post-quantum cryptography, which we have also been working on, but is not yet in the crypto refresh yet. But there is a separate draft for the use of post-quantum cryptography in OpenPGP. So that will come relatively soon as well. And then finally, we also would like to start working on forward secrecy. That's not quite as far along yet, but perfect forward secrecy is obviously something that Signal, for example, has been championing, and is a good security property to have in an encryption standard. Although it's slightly more difficult to achieve in an email context, since you're storing emails basically forever usually, but still there are some improvements that we can and would like to make. And then, as I mentioned before, we would also like to standardize key transparency for OpenPGP. So then as to the implementation status, here you can see a graph. Some of the implementations are already very far along. Some of them not quite yet. Also, notably for its absence is GNUPG. Unfortunately, it seems like GNUPG does not want to implement the crypto refresh and rather would like to stick with the previous draft, RFC 480 bis, which they have rebranded LibrePGP. Which is a rather shrewd marketing move, I would say, since, you know, LibreOffice is better than OpenOffice, so clearly LibrePGP should be better than OpenPGP, right? But actually, it's not the case. It's more or less a rebranded version of the old standard. And there is a lot of controversy about it at the moment, so I felt like I couldn't really get around that. So I've here included a short comparison. In the interest of time, I won't go through all of the points, but I would say the technical differences are very minor, and in my personal opinion, should not have led to such a big schism in the community. And in fact, I still am somewhat hopeful that we can find some sort of resolution. Particularly if you consider that RFC 480 bis originally was intended to become an RFC. If it had become an RFC and people had implemented that, then the crypto refresh would have been an update to that, and we would have basically had to implement both anyway. And my proposed resolution is essentially that I would argue that everyone should implement both. If you're going to implement the crypto refresh, implementing LibrePGP as well is not that much added effort. The other way around, there is a bit more effort. I haven't heard any objections from any of the other implementations to implementing crypto refresh, so I still hope that GNUPG eventually will do so as well, although it seems unlikely at the moment, but let's see. So, in conclusion, we're trying to drag OpenPGP into the 21st century. Hopefully we've succeeded. Thank you. My other point that I would like you to take away is it's becoming more and more possible to build modern email encryption applications using OpenPGP. It doesn't have to have the UX of 10, 20 years ago. And finally, I hope that everyone will implement and use the crypto refresh. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. I see one straight hand immediately, so this needs to be rewarded instantly.
Hi. First question that comes to my mind, especially when you compare the GNUPG to other implementations, is what about hardware support? Because, you know, in my mind, and this is why I haven't used either of these implementations, especially those JavaScript-based, is that I'd like to keep these keys in my hand on a device. So what about it?
Yes. So there is an open pull request for openbgp.js to add support for hardware-based keys. Although in full disclosure, it has been a bit idle in the last while. But I still hope that someone will do the work to support it also in other implementations. I'm not fully up to date on what's the status for the support in all the libraries, but certainly it would be good to add support elsewhere as well, yes.
Another question, actually. I wanted to congratulate you, heartfelt, for not having the suckful user interfaces that PGP used to have. This sounds hopeful. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm very excited about your approach to key transparency. Well, or protons, not yours personally, but I think it's very good, very commendable. Do you have any thoughts on revocation transparency to make that more?
Well? Yes. So. In our implementation of key transparency, we do include, for example, when the user marks a key as compromised or obsolete, it is included in key transparency. So this means that once that's included, other people shouldn't use the key anymore, right? And I would imagine that in the standardized version, you would similarly include revocations in key transparency, such that when you revoke a key, you can be sure that others won't use it anymore.
Okay. So, well, the way I know, you just get a new record for the mapping, which is not the revocation.
Yes. So we always support updates to the key. So the key transparency always provides a snapshot in time. So we repeatedly publish all the keys, conceptually speaking. And also when you generate a new key, the keys are updated, but also when you revoke a key. So essentially it will be the same thing.
When you were going through your list of new changes in OpenGPT, you were talking a lot about these optional features. But does it make sense to have optional features when both ends kind of need to implement them in order to be able to communicate with the...
Sorry, I didn't fully hear. What kind of features were you saying?
The optional features, like the...
Optional features.
Yeah.
I see. So there is a lot of new mandatory features as well. Curve 255.19 is mandatory to implement. OCB is mandatory to implement. But to be perfectly honest, a standard doesn't have that much power over implementations just by existing, right? Every implementation in the end can choose what they implement, even if we write that it's mandatory in the spec. We hope that everyone will implement the mandatory parts and the optional parts as well, usually, but we can't force anyone, right?
All right. Thank you again, Daniel, for that interesting talk and insight.